This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to this episode. Very pumped, very energized for today's show. If you guys didn't know what this show is about already, we're The Mind Muscle Project, and we are the number one fitness podcast in Australia. And we're going to talk, we talk to an international audience. Over 100 countries listen to us every week. Hundreds of thousands listen every month. And look, today we're going to talk about a lot of things. Keep it somewhat fitness related, but actually, where I want to start this is with lobsters. Yeah, don't give me that look. So lobsters, why am I bringing lobsters up? Well, I actually bought a funny story about this book, right? So I bought a book once called The 12 Rules for Life. The author is Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
Most people have heard of Jordan Peterson. I'd listened to him on a few podcasts.
I haven't read it, but I've seen it in every airport.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I first bought the book at the airport. I was like, oh, of course I'm going to read a book about rules for life. Yeah. Smashes the airport game, which absolutely has zero traffic for him right now. So I bought the book, started reading it, left it on the plane. Probably 2 months or 2 years later.
How many rules?
Didn't get to any. Just read the preface. No, because he's got like a foreword and then a preface,
yeah.
Or like two different things where he talks about how the book came to be, and then someone else talks about Jordan himself, and it's such a dense book. So that was like 50 pages before you even hit the first rule. But Ev, she has gotten very into Jordan Peterson recently.
I thought it was for men.
Mostly is.
Yeah,
mostly is. He really helps men that are like depressed and have a lot of issues become like more confident and like help themselves. So he's a clinical psychologist, but he's also like a best-selling author. But he's grounded and rooted in the science of the brain, essentially neurology. So anyway, she started reading the book, and she started listening to his lectures. So he has like 2 to 3 hour lectures on YouTube with like millions of views and like super interesting. He teaches at the University of Toronto, and he did teach at the University of Boston for a long time, but his lectures are just like, they're some of the most popular lectures in the world. And so anyway, his first rule is stand up tall with your shoulders back. Yeah. So it goes on to explain, and I will, if you know his content in absolute...
So he's into fitness straight away, like shoulders down.
Well...
Depression?
I guess so.
Retraction.
The reason he talks about this...
He doesn't really look like he's into fitness.
I don't think he's like a super gym guy. Right. I think he's like tries to be quite healthy. I know our mate James Smith was on Michaela Peterson's podcast, his daughter, recently. But there's a long story. He's got a lot of health issues.
Well, I know that I heard a bit of him on Joe Rogan, like on YouTube, not the whole episode. And I know he and his daughter does the carnivore diet.
Yeah. Yeah, it really helped her with some like chronic health issues that she has. But he actually got addicted to pain medication in the States. And he went on an experimental, because nothing was helping his rehab.
But did he have an injury?
I think he just had something minor. I think he had like a surgery or something. And that's how most people happen, right?
Yeah.
And he got really addicted to it. And then the only way he got out of, or the only reason that he tried to basically almost killed himself, but...
From the pain medication.
Addiction. Yeah, he was so heavily addicted that the only protocol left was an experimental rehabilitation program in Russia, where they put you in an induced coma for a month and slowly the drugs come out of your system.
Is that just pain medication you can get, like Mobi?
Yeah, like opiates. But no, it's not like anti-inflammatories. It's an opioid.
But it's what you would get. Like, it's no stronger than what you'd get if you had a shoulder surgery. Or is this like some black market shit?
No. I think it's an opiate. So it's like a derivative of heroin.
But you could get it at the chemist with a prescription.
With a prescription, Okay. Yeah, correct, yeah. And
that's crazy.
That's why people get addicted to it, right? Because you only have to write a script.
Yeah, he doesn't look like the guy to me that would be on the corner of a road picking up drugs.
Well, there's just loads of people that have those addictions that are still functioning humans in society, right? I mean, how many people are functioning alcoholics, functioning coke addicts, functioning whatever, right? But... everyone just manages their addictions in some way. So anyway, to come back to the book, it shouldn't take away from his actual teachings, I should say. His teachings are really good. But anyway, he comes back to this first chapter, stand up with your shoulders back. I like it because it's like a fitness-based one in some ways, right? Like we sort of mentioned. So the reason he does it is because he compares it actually to lobsters. So lobsters are like one of the, I think he said they're the oldest species on Earth that are like a have a brain and they stuff like that. Besides like a bacteria or something, right?
Yeah.
They're like I don't know. Connie, can you look up how old a fucking lobster is? But anyway,
like the species, not how long they live.
Yeah. But basically, the reason he studies lobsters, or in this particular example, is using lobsters, is because what is it?
No, that's how old lobsters live up to 140 years, but the species.
How old is the species of lobster?
It's going to be a lot longer.
Yeah. This is a long way to get to my point, but I think it's relevant to the conversation. I think it's like 7 or 8 million years old.
480 million years old. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, so lobsters have been around for ages. So, right, the point
human-sized lobsters, 480 million years ago. Oh, my God. Thank God they are gone.
Anyway, so the point of the lobsters is because, as you know, other species, if you didn't know this or you don't believe in evolution, this is how we came to be. Every species is a derivative of another species, right? So like we evolved from like bacteria, which like evolved from like, is it prokaryotes or eukaryotes? And then single cells to multi cells to like, you know, breathing and lungs. And, you know, we're like so similar to birds.
And at the very tip, me and Lockie.
Definitely not. We're at the bottom. So then you've got, you know, the species like, you know, elephants and birds and all these complex creatures. And then you've got creatures like us, which, you know, we're actually very similar. We just kind of evolved, you know, just slightly differently. One gene mutated one way. And then rather than feathers, we ended up with fingers. You know what I mean? So in many ways, when you pull back the complex tree all the way to the root, you get a species like a lobster. And so why they're interesting to study is because so many of the characteristics and the traits that are in lobsters are genetically hardwired in us. And he makes the point through this first rule that one of the most, it's inarguable, and I think most people listening to this, I think some people, maybe they hear this, it really kind of riles them up and it makes them quite upset. But I think the truth is the truth, whether you like it or not, and that our species and all species on Earth follow a hierarchy. They follow a deeply ingrained social hierarchy. And that hierarchy is, at the bottom, you've got the people that, you know, to just use colloquial terms, they're losers, right? Mm. They suck at what they do. They don't believe in themselves. They're not successful. They just suck at life. And then you've got, everyone knows people like that. And then you've got people at the top. You've got the tip of the spear world leaders. You've got, you know, the Elon Musk of the world, right? The LeBron James of the world, the people that we idolize. And then you've got everyone that falls in between. And what, I guess, different countries and socialists and I guess people that want, I guess for lack of a better term, they want global equality amongst all people. What they want is they want everyone to be equal. They want everyone to have the same amount of wealth, the same amount of money, the same amount of access to certain things. And obviously, different cultures have different variations of that. Some cultures are really extreme. You've got countries like Russia or Syria or India or probably not China in this case, but maybe China previously, where you've got massive gaps between the wealthy and the poor. And then you've got other variations of it where you've got like Australia, where there's a huge middle class, right? And then you've got, you know, cultural differences between like a Nordic country versus like China, where it's like, you know, all the wealth is spread out. And then in China, like the government controls it. And then it's like in the Nordic countries, like, okay, we pay for people's like university and stuff like that, right? There's all these different variations of culture. Now, the point of this is that when you strip back all the politics, all the culture, all the social kind of differences between nations, and you just like took humans out, you took all that cultural programming and you just put them back on an island, they would rearrange themselves again into a social hierarchy. You know, the elite intellectuals, the elite physical specimens, they would all rise to the top naturally. And that's just how the world works. And I think that's in some ways, it's disheartening for people to hear, but he's making the point that this is how it is. This is hundreds of millions of years of programming, and this is how it will always be. There will always be a hierarchy. And then the people at the top, the reason why it says you have to work so hard, you have to fight your whole life to be at the top, is because in all species across the world, the people at the top, they get the most access to safer neighborhoods, better access to food, more security. They get better access to mates. Mm. And then what he's saying, even at a deeper level, is they have
mates at first, like friends.
Probably both, yeah, right? They have better people, more people want to be friends with them. Mm. they get access to better friendships, right? You know, the people at the top, you know, their friendship circle is an elite friendship circle for a reason, right? They don't just hang out with the middle class necessarily. So he's saying why you have to battle your whole life to get there, besides all those perks that I just listed, is that you also have lesser... So there's actually a neurochemical reason to be at the top, and that is to do with serotonin. And this is where how it ties it back to posture. So the lobsters that they studied that were at the top of the mating hierarchy, or the top of the social hierarchy, or the top of the hierarchy, they were the tallest and had the best posture. And I can't remember what the other neurochemical was. It wasn't like dopamine or one of the main ones. I think it started with D. But anyway, dolamine, I don't know. But anyway, the correlation, the lobsters with the highest, so high serotonin levels in all species are correlated with like better mood, better happiness, like, there's no like self-confidence, but in humans it would be self-confidence. Other animals don't have that sense of self, but it would be like, you know, better mood, better energy, clearer thinking, all this sort of stuff. And now the lobsters, when they cut their brains, they analyze them with the lower hierarchy, so the ones that were more, had smaller posture and more shrunken up, they had lower levels of serotonin. And so he's saying that with better posture, you get increased levels of serotonin. Posture, like stand up tall with your shoulders back. By doing that, naturally, what you do is you create higher levels of serotonin in your brain, which obviously offsets bad mood, depression, other issues like that. And what he was saying is at the lower end, you know, people that are defeated through life, you can see them straight away. You don't ever have to meet them. You don't have to hear their story. You just look at their posture, right? It's very like animalistic. It's very instinctual. You can see it. And so what he was saying was that what's interesting is if you stay in a bad posture for too long and your serotonin gets too low, is what happens is an actual physical change in a part of your brain at the base of the stem. And that part of your brain is like, it's part of the reptilian brain. So it's to do with fight or flight, and it controls energy and energy resources and uses for the rest of your physical body, for your limbs, for your muscles, for your tissues. And basically what he said was when you're at the lower end of the spectrum, and you walk around with that more defeated posture, is that small stresses in life that typically the top of the food chain would not worry about and would easily dismiss are a much bigger deal in your world and set off the part of your brain that should be controlling your perspective on these issues, sets it off, like rather than turning it to a 1 or a 2, dials it up to an 80 or a 90 out of 100. And that, what that does is it utilizes too much of your body's resources for small things. So an example would be, say you're at work and your boss makes a comment to you, right? Maybe your boss is like, you know what? Your numbers just aren't looking very good, you know? Now, if he's saying that, take the two scenarios, right? So say someone at the top of the food chain, say someone at the bottom of the food chain. So say it's like one of the top guys in the world in Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe he sits on the board at Amazon, but he still has a boss, right? The chairman's like, you know what? Your numbers aren't looking very good.
They're like 6 billion. Pathetic.
Yeah, should be 9 billion. And then you've got the guy at the bottom of the food chain. Now, the guy at the bottom of the food chain, he thinks like this. He thinks, fuck, my numbers aren't very good. Fuck, what if I... You know, what if I don't perform this month and then the next month? And then what if I have a bad year? And then, man, what if I lose my job? And then I'm going to have to move out of my apartment. And then, oh, man, I'm going to end up on the street. And then he's stressing and stressing and stressing. And he's using up a lot of his physical resources. He's burning himself out. He's loading his system with adrenaline. He's dumping loads of dopamine, serotonin, wasting all those resources and stressing all day. Now, someone at the top of the food chain, what the part of their brain does... and by the way, you know, you're not born this way. You get there by choices in your life and how you come back from these choices and what you do with yourself. Now, the person at the top just thinks, that's fine. That's all good because look at my performance in the past. I'm going to do better next time. It's just a challenge. I've got a big end of the month coming up and I'm going to crush my numbers and he'll fucking see, like, watch this. All right. And you know, they have a different high performing, high achieving mindset. And as a result, the actual resources that their brain uses to just operate through all these small daily problems is completely different to the person down the bottom. They perceive stress in a completely different way. And as a result, aging, chronic diseases, illnesses, mental health issues are way more prevalent down the bottom for these reasons and way less prevalent up the top. And so it kind of ties it all together with stand up tall with your shoulders back is the best way that you can do. And he gives loads of examples in social situations where it's good to do this. But he's like, if you can do this for the rest of your life, you can't. It's like it's almost guaranteed you can't end up down the bottom because of how we're such social creatures and the way you present yourself socially in that way people respond to you completely different. They treat you completely differently. They give you opportunities completely differently. I thought it was fucking interesting. It looks like you.
So the interesting. Yeah. The lobster part of this.
He got the idea from lobsters.
Right, got the idea from lobsters.
The science is based in, like, you know, the social hierarchy, the evidence for all that stuff is in, like, our oldest species. And it's like, look, the tallest, highest standing, because if, like, the lobster's at the top of the food, because you can see, right, who's the one that's, like, the king and all the others, like, bring them food and shit, and they, like, mate with all the other female lobsters or whatever. That lobster stands up the tallest, has the highest level of serotonin. If he was balled up and he was small and he was little, then maybe it's like, all right, cool. Rule number one, ball up, be small and little. But we know it's not that. It's stand up tall with your shoulders back, right? And you just can't walk past someone that's not standing up tall with their shoulders back, no matter how tall they are, and look at them and be like, that's not a confident person. That's not a person who respects themselves. You automatically look at a person with their shoulders down, you're like, that person's hurting.
Like fucking cyclists. They're the bottom of the food chain.
Not if they win. I guess they stand up tall if they win. But yeah, they're rounded over in their sport. It's not a good sport for your serotonin.
Nah.
But yeah, I thought that was super interesting. Thought I'd share it.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think it's very true, you would think, in animals particularly, because if you're bigger and stronger, you also, I presume, get eaten less, right? Because they're like in physical battles. Do you think that there's an unwinding of this now, because what you see more and more with technology now is that if you look at, say, a lot of people that do really successfully, they often were like real nerds growing up.
Yeah.
And were often low confidence.
Nerds around the world.
Yeah, and they're like the small, nerdy, shoulders rounded over. They potentially improve that when they get older, but were a bit of that person when they were younger. And the tall, confident bouncer isn't quite making the same salary as the chief technology officer who everyone bullied at school.
Yeah. Look, I think but then you got to look at, okay, well, that's when you compare their bank accounts.
Mm.
But is that actually giving them posture? Because there's plenty of guys like that who sit in their basement all day. I'll give you a perfect example, like esports athletes, right? Sit in their basement all day, only interact with people online, have very little social contact. But then when they go to the tournaments and they're in the fucking global stage where there's South Korea, 85,000 people, World of Warcraft, right? And they're being interviewed and shit on the red carpet. They are not confident people. Mm. They don't have that social confidence, you know? They're trying to get interviewed.
But they must be confident in the game. They must be badasses. I fucking don't
in
play
that,
video games.
Yeah, but in that small context of time, in that moment,
they're
of course.
They're like Michael Jordan in the game.
Yeah, which is why it's an interesting evolution. Because now, you can kind of go against stand up tall with your shoulders back.
But you got to do it like virtually.
Yeah, But does that person have higher levels of serotonin? Maybe not.
Probably not.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like they go out in a social situation. They're like, fuck, I'm such a badass on this computer, but I can't even look this fucking person in the eye that serves me coffee every morning. You know? So it's like, well, yeah, I think that you would, if you were the chief technology officer, I would find it hard to argue if you're making $2 or $3 million a year and you're a very successful app or whatever, you wouldn't not be a confident person. You would have head up, shoulders back. Maybe when you started, you weren't, but then as you've built it. Exactly. And you've had to kind of, you know, there's no way you can be the CTO of an amazing company with just sitting in your basement the whole time. It'd be pretty hard to do unless you never, ever had to interact with anyone. But I'd imagine, like, if you're coming into, you know, Amazon, they're ready to hire a new CTO, you're going to give yourself a much better chance if you walk in there standing tall, shoulders back, versus the guys all bent over. They're like, yeah, he's got really good numbers and he's worked with good companies, but man, I don't know. He's just like
fucking hunchback.
Yeah, it just didn't seem very confident. He didn't have a good presence. Do I want to work with this guy? Do I want him in my company? So I think it's still hard to get around.
Well, that's the benefits of fitness.
Yeah.
That does happen. Like, I don't know if you've seen that with clients, but you get a person in the gym, you train them properly, definitely see their posture improve.
Totally.
Like, you see them a little bit taller.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's big difference because part of posture is conscious change where it's like, okay, I need to stand up taller, bring my shoulders back. And then there's actually having the strength and the muscles there to
the
do
endurance.
It. Yeah.
Because you'll see someone runs, like towards the end of the run, their posture is worse and worse.
Yeah.
Because the muscles fatigue.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, you have to have heavier, thicker rear delts to actually have that shoulder sit back to the actual biomechanics of the shoulder to be pulled back from heavier muscle.
So, the best example is if you ever watch like the 100-meter sprints, I like watching them sometimes, and you watch them like all before, and they're all like trying to get as tall as they can. They're like strutting as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Usain would generally tower over everybody, but there was like good ones, like Maurice Green, I don't know if you remember him.
The Canadian?
Nah, he's the American with like his tongue. No, Jamaican, sorry. His tongue was always out, like doing like, they would do like crazy, like animal shit at the start line to be like, just the biggest beast.
Yeah, right. No, but talking about that those like traditions and shit. Man, watching that Gallipoli show I was talking about the other week, so sad what used to happen. I couldn't stop watching. I couldn't watch it anymore.
Oh, you didn't get through the series?
Nah, it's too tragic, bro. It's like fucking depressing. Like,
yeah, I didn't watch
it. It's so depressing. And but the New Zealanders, before they ran out of the trench, which they never should have in the first place, they were doing like the haka and shit.
Fuck.
Yeah, to like scare the opponent. But the haka
that's not working against guys.
The haka doesn't take on bullets. You know, it doesn't stop you from bullets. But anyway, so speaking of man down. Speaking of sprinters, this morning I was talking to, well, actually you missed the conversation with Andy Galpin. I don't know if you caught it back up, but we talked about sprinting and fast twitch fibers. You actually, what he was saying, and what we're all subject to, is there are nerve pathways that innervate fast twitch fibers, right? Specifically, like neurons built specifically to innervate fast twitch muscles. Now, you can grow and shrink and lose fast twitch fibers over your life, and the nerves will stay there. But if you don't actually use them for long periods of time, and he said it's like 15, 20, 25 years, those nerves actually die. And once they're dead, you can never, ever build fast twitch fibers again. I thought what was interesting is like having worked with so many clients over the years, and now we've incorporated a bit of like power and sprint training into the program. People that have never sprinted, so they never played sport, and then if they got into exercise...
Or they maybe stopped sport at 14.
Really young. Yeah, or younger, 15. Right? Yeah. And then they, like, their only form of exercise was not resistance training. It was like jogging, right? So non-fast twitch exercise or running a bike, all right? Or walking. And you watch them try and sprint. Now, I think we're just getting people just in time now. We're getting them kind of like in their mid-30s, early 40s. I think not quite enough time is like. Maybe the fast twitch fibers are kind of still there. And it does come back, but how long it takes to come back is almost like strength training. It's like if someone can't do a pull-up, in the time it takes them to be able to learn to do a pull-up, it's like getting someone to learn how to sprint again takes like 12 weeks from they can't pick their feet up, their hamstrings won't fire properly, they can't coordinate their arms, their timing, their posture's all fucked up. Like, you lose sprinting, you lose that ability to sprint, and once it coasts, it's like, it's gone. So, I just really think it's so important to keep something like that in there.
Yeah, and it's the one you know the most, right? Like, any kid can just break out into a sprint anytime.
Yeah.
Because you generally ask any adult to do that, and, like, huge fear around it.
Yeah, and it's like the fast, it's almost like their body's all fucked up. They're like, I just don't know how to run fast. Your team try and coordinate it, and everything's just falling apart. And I just think it's one of the most natural movements you can do. Like sprinting, when I'm talking about sprinting, I'm not talking about like sprinting on a bike or like sprinting on a roll. I'm talking like sprinting on your
cadence
running. Yeah. I just think it's one of those things you just got to keep moving. And I think all the injuries you get trying to build sprinting back in, if you can just kind of navigate your way through those and like build sprinting back in the correct way in a structured program, once you get it, you should try and keep it regularly in your thing. So it's like the people that never stop playing sport, not really that injured. You know, it's like my dad. He plays soccer every week.
Forever.
He was his 50th season this year, or 51st season this year. Something crazy, right? But he's still out there like running really fast because he's got a couple of niggles just with age and stuff. But there's other guys out there that are like super fit, young. They try and get back into it that I know. They pull their hamstring first thing.
Well, it's worse, I think, because they've built some power and strength in their legs, but no fast twitch movements.
Yeah. I just think it's so important to keep. I am a little slightly worried of like with this marathon training, because I do basically no sprinting. I think after that, I'll just cut all my jogging and just get back into like intervals.
I don't know if you've seen as well as this race every year. It's like the Centurion running race. It's like a 100-meter dash every year.
The one down the hill with the cheese ball?
No, it's just a regular 100-meter race. Oh, okay. But you have to be 100 to enter shit. It. And man, it's on YouTube. Like, they go pretty quick.
Yeah, right. What do they go, like 12 seconds?
No. They're 100 years old. Are you joking? Fucking idiot. Bro, they're so old. No, dude.
What shoes they wear? Nike Vaporfly.
It's like a 100-year-old running race. I think it's every year. Probably COVID cancel it, but
the best part is looking at the tabs.
No, I think they run like over 20 seconds, but they're 100.
We got lobsters. We got Floyd Mayweather versus Jake Paul.
Yeah, you can pick like the top Centurion one. No, the top video.
Okay, what's sad is if we read this out and you're slower than them.
I can't be. I think it's like a 20-second.
Yeah. Hit that mute for us, bro.
Oh, we're gonna find out. Yeah. Dude, you're okay. Really not thinking about how old these people are.
While we're doing that, well, I don't know, bro. Maybe they just kept doing it and they just didn't lose it. So, one interesting thing that popped out this week, someone sent it to us, F45 has acquired true protein. All right. Alarm bells, I'll be honest, in my own head. How are you feeling about this?
Yeah, I guess I first thought about it from the perspective of, I wonder why they bought it, firstly. And to what
oh my god, bro, she is fucking fast.
Okay, they're not running at 12 seconds.
Nah, but that's like marathon pace.
Yeah, probably your
is
marathon
she 100?
Pace. Yeah, they're over, have no. to be over 100.
No.
Can you see what time she got, Connor?
No.
I'm guessing she like is, around 25
seconds. No, wait, no, hold
seconds.
On. No, she's 100, but... No, but the other ones weren't 100. No, they are. No. No way. No, that person was way too fast for 100. That's not. It's not possible. Go back to the start. Yeah, that one. That she's not 100, dude. No
yeah,
way.
She's not
100. No way. No. That one's. Yeah, she's 100.
She's 100.
Yeah, she's 100. But she's still moving, bro.
There's some male ones out there, but it's pretty solid, right?
That's
for 100
solid.
Years old.
Yeah, dude.
If anyone's got a grandparent in their 80s, they often barely can walk.
Like. Bro, there's people in their fucking 50s that can't walk.
Yeah, that's the difference from keeping it up or not.
But there are some people in the city now, honestly, I reckon if I tripped them, they would roll down
that's
the hill.
That's honestly the pace that a lot of 50-year-olds are at.
Yeah.
And...
Bro, she's killing it. I love how they're helping her. They're like, fuck off, I just ran the race.
The funny part about it is they look really similar to how you finish a marathon. Like, exhausted, like, holding them up.
That's awesome.
It's pretty sweet. Okay, so to F45, yeah, first thought about why they bought True Protein, and then I guess I also bought I wonder how it's going to change the products.
Yeah.
And then you think, hey, I don't know the structure of the deal, obviously, so I have no idea. Sometimes with this stuff, they're like, acquire it, but the same company keeps running it.
And yeah,
They take no management into it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they completely rip the whole thing out. Everybody's out, new people are in.
Mm.
I suspect that's not going to happen for a while, but
yeah.
you never know. But to the first point, I think the most likely reason would be, I don't know exactly, but it seems like F45 has stalled with their growth and they wanted to go to an IPO, like you do a public offering for your company. Generally, to do very well there, you need to show a lot of growth in it. And I suspect their growth is slow. So this would be a way when you take on a company with growing revenues, you're like, oh, we can show growth again.
Right.
Similar to how they're also doing F45 Pilates. I don't know if we've talked about that.
Yeah.
But there's F45 Pilates coming out now.
Yeah.
So these are, I think, really smart avenues. Because running gyms myself, you can see how both of those are really good because they both are just using their existing customer base.
Yeah.
So, everyone at 45, oh, we'll do some Pilates. Or I have a friend that can do Pilates. Supplements even make more sense. Everybody has supplements, right? At these
perfect,
gyms. And they're already, yes, it's the perfect one. So, I think it's a really good way that they can show, hey, we're still a growing company. And, even if the popularity of this one comes down, then it doesn't matter because Pilates is going up and supplements are going up and we're set for life. And I don't know how they're going to do it. There's two ways. They can either do it, say, with the gyms, where it's a new moneymaker for the gyms. Hey, if you're a gym owner, you're making 10 grand a month of your gym. Now you can make an extra 5 grand with supplements, and you can sell the supplements to your members, right? Which would be a smart way, and they both make money. Or they can do it how they did the online training during COVID, which all the gym owners hated, which is they just sell it straight from HQ, and you cut the gym owner out.
Yeah.
So you've got this poor gym owner there who's only doing okay with his gym, and now the headquarters goes and makes all the money on the members through selling them supplements. Well, they already had some stuff. They've dabbled in it and they've they've done my MasterChef meals and stuff in there. But now they're obviously looking to really take control.
Yeah. Man, like you said, we don't know how the deal was structured. So my hope is that it's you guys know what you're doing. You run supplements. We just need distribution throughout our studios. And, you just keep making the same quality products you made. My fear is that there will be some... I don't think they'll fire the whole team, but my fear is, and I know how F45 has been run in the past very aggressively, is that there will be some, these margins aren't right, this doing that, cut that, change it to here, we've got a better supply.
Perfect example was I remember talking to them, I was like, oh, what's the magnesium you use, right? Because we want to buy it. And it's like, oh, we get this one from Germany. Straight away, I know, hey, you could buy magnesium for half of the price of that.
If not less.
Yeah, the quality is important, right?
So that's why we like True Protein.
True is quality products. I just hope they maintain that quality and don't try and half the price of the cost, keep the price point.
And that's anyone who's a fan of the True Protein brand and uses True Protein, is that's what your hope is. And if it was to go away, I'd be sad because there's not really another True Protein in the world.
But maybe not, because maybe they'll say, no, we want to be a high-end brand. Like we have a F45, which is kind of pretty high-end for fitness, $75 a week. Most gyms are 12.
Yeah.
We want to have a high-end supplement brand. Yeah. We don't want a cheap supplement brand. And word does get out eventually. I think if you keep making your supplements cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, yeah, people realize, I mean, you can't hold up that fake shit forever.
Yeah.
So hopefully, yeah, really hope they maintain that. Obviously, keep the branding, because I guess I'm not going to feel that good if I'm wearing like an F45
protein
shirt. Yeah. You know, I don't really want to do that, but I'm happy to represent the band of True Protein.
Yeah, yeah.
So hopefully they keep that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they will. I can't see them changing the brand, but yeah, I could definitely see them cutting costs on like, oh, let's get the whey from here. Mm. It's still pretty good, but it's going to add 2% margins, you know what I mean? Which is millions of dollars. So,
but I guess what we can say is that we'll stay in touch with True, and we always know if it's still quality or not.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be able to tell. Okay, and so yeah, be interesting what happens there. Now, what we announced this week, or I guess it'd be last week, but actually this week in real time, we announced that we had a sit down. We thought about what we're doing with the brand of the Mind Muscle Project and how we can do more for you guys that are listeners and been listeners for a long time. And you know, you tune in every week. We follow a similar format, but we feel like, you know, if you've been listening for a long time, you're obviously getting a lot of value as well. That's coming straight through the mic, Raf. Then the for you guys, essentially, we want to give you more to, I guess, in some ways, reward your loyalty, and I guess in many ways, give you a different angle of what it's like for us behind the scenes to kind of grow Creature Fitness, growing Locker Room, and growing the podcast. And so, therefore, we felt like it was appropriate to. We're on YouTube, obviously. We post the podcast on YouTube, but we wanted to add, I guess, a vlog style behind the scenes. And we're calling it Behind the Project. So we'll be launching that in about 2 weeks. We've got some new camera gear coming. We're just setting up the systems to make it run, make it smooth, because there's nothing worse than creators promising stuff that doesn't come out. So we will be launching that very soon. Next couple of weeks, you guys can expect that. It'll be on our YouTube channel. If you don't already subscribe to our YouTube channel, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. And yeah, you'll see more of the behind the scenes stuff. And you know, we'd love for your feedback. If you guys really enjoy it, if you don't enjoy it, maybe you're just a podcast person, maybe you're not a YouTube person, it'll pop up on Instagram anyway. I think most of you guys that listen to this follow us on Instagram also. But yeah, we're excited to kind of bring this new element of the show back. Connor, can you switch back for us, bro? So, last thing we'll leave you with before we get into listener questions, got a lot of listener questions this week, is something I listened to recently about social media. Last week, it got me thinking. We had a question from one of the listeners about am I too late to the game? Am I this, I guess, not entitled, but am I deserving to share content as a so-called expert on social media to build my profile? How do you go about building a social media profile? Is it important? Have I missed the boat? I think it's something valuable that I could add to my own business or add to myself as an employee. And I really, you know, social media is just beginning. I think people that think it's dead or feel like it's been around, especially millennials, they feel like we've had it for a long time and TikTok and all this new stuff and Snapchat, I don't want to do that. And it feels, in some ways, it feels old. It is only just beginning. YouTube, I know it's been around a long time, but it's just beginning. Becoming a creator, becoming an influencer, we are only on the tip of the iceberg. There is still so much more to come. And I think that if you play the game where you choose to ignore it, look, that's fine. You can do what you want. If you don't want to share your personal life online, I'm not telling you that you have to. But if you do and you do it well, you are at such an advantage. And you're at such an advantage, not from someone that even just owns a company like we do, but you're an advantage as an employee. Your bosses, the people you work for, they all have social media. We all have social media, whether it's on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. If you have a good profile where you share who you are and you're authentic and it's valuable to people, it's educating, it's funny, people will hire you, they will promote you these days, they will think differently and think better of you if you do a good job with it. And that's a fact. Like every single person that ever inquires at our business or interns with us, I'm going through all their social media. And if I see someone that doesn't put any effort into social media whatsoever, or they do a very, very shit job of it, I'm less likely to hire that person, because not because it matters that much. It's because I have no idea who they are before I meet them. And if 10 people It's kind of like your calling card, right? If 10 people inquire for a job at Locker Room and three of them do a really good job, those on social media, and I really like their content, those are the three people I'm going to remember. Those are the three people like, oh, that was that really interesting gymnastics guy. Or like, oh, that was that guy who always posts like really interesting recipes. Or that guy shared some really good stuff about some of the books he was reading. Those are the three people that stand out in my mind. Those are the three people I probably want to get to know a bit more because I'm a bit more interested in, right? And so then, as a result, then I set up the second meeting. And the person who had absolutely nothing, I found nothing about them. I'm like, oh, why would I be interested? You haven't sent me anything interesting. There's nothing I can learn or find out about you. So I think the age of, you know, becoming even just a micro-influencer, even if you have nothing to sell, like I think it's just extremely valuable. And yeah, I would encourage anyone who's thinking about putting out more content and better content and growing a personal brand, because you never know what it could be useful for. I would definitely encourage it. I think it will open more doors and more opportunities for you in the future.
What do you think is the one of the future?
I think we have what we're going to use in the future.
Same ones.
Yeah, I think we're just going to keep making them better and better. Maybe there's like a...
You don't think they have a bit of a timeline on them? Like, no. you just get over it?
No. No, I've heard a few people talk about these and argue about them, but I think it's pretty well established now that they're not going anywhere. They're too big. It's like too big to fail almost. Because they have such a... They have basically everyone on the planet, right? So, to move billions of people over to a new platform, it's just really, really tough. Yeah. Like, people forget, TikTok's been going a very long time. Like, so the time it's been popular to now, like, it's been in China for, like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years or something. So, it's been going a very long time. It's just kind of only made its way into, like, the Western world popular, like, only recently. But it's been, like, it's had most of China for a very long time. Like, it's well established. And for, like, a new player, like Clubhouse, for example, that was trying to make its way in, it's just hard. I think there'll be small ones that pop up, but ones that actually dethrone the Instagrams and the Facebooks and stuff, nah, basically.
Really?
Not
exactly. I thought it was the opposite. I thought it seemed so hard to make a new platform. It's kind of like when the WhatsApp thing happened, right? People were like, oh, I can't remember the name of that other one. There's another messaging service that people were like, oh, you got to get on it. It's pretty big, but it's not, sorry? No, it's pretty big, but it doesn't share information, right? So when Facebook came out, I was like, oh, it seems like impossible because like everybody's got to be on it. But I even just saw with how more popular WhatsApp has become, how it's actually not that hard to get people to get on new apps.
Mm.
You know, if a few years ago, I messaged nobody on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And now you can be in Australia, and most people have WhatsApp.
Yeah, but that's, okay, but now that's the messaging platform, right?
Yeah.
So now to overtake that messaging platform, it's like, it's the first mover effect. They kind of win the whole market. That's what happens in tech. It's because it's infinitely scalable. Yeah, but
you can say the same, right? It's like email, hey, you can't take down email, right? And then something like Slack comes along. Never even thought of it before.
No, but you're still a separate category. It's not competing. Like, you still need email. You don't replace it. Like, a replacement for Instagram will never come along. That's what I'm saying.
Really, I felt like it was more that they would niche more, right? So, like, Facebook used to be everybody's newsfeed. Yeah. Now, almost nobody even bothers to use it as a newsfeed.
No, still.
Yeah, still huge,
yeah,
right?
Still more active users than Instagram.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But it started to find like a bit more of a place, right? Because most
people go on it for a different
reason.
Yeah,
people don't really use it to share their photos anymore. Yeah. There's so many other apps they end up spending time on, but it's become like really big, say, with groups, something like that, right?
I think we're saying the same thing here.
Well, I felt like for a while, I was like, oh, you'll never overtake, right? People won't join new messaging platforms or new apps. But I guess where I've been surprised is that it does seem like to me new things can get... People are very willing to actually jump on new platforms, new things. Like, I mean, I guess...
I guess I'm just saying those... But you'll always still come back to Facebook for groups. You'll always still come back to Instagram for photo sharing and blog-style posts or whatever, and little videos. You'll always come back to TikTok for entertainment music. Like, everything will have its category. They'll own that category. No one will replace them. No one's gonna replace WhatsApp. I'd be very surprised if they did.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it doesn't seem like that long. Like, I guess TikTok's been popular 5 or 6 years. I guess I could imagine something else coming in and overtaking it.
Mm.
You think that they get too strong?
Yeah, I think it's too big because it's infinitely scalable. That's why, I think. Because they have no limit and they can always get better and they can make the changes instantly to get better. So as soon as something comes along...
I do see that.
Say something comes along, right? Like Snapchat. Mm. Oh, fuck, this is sick. Instagram's cool. We'll just add stories. That's it. Now everyone has stories overnight. So it's like really hard to take them down, right? Because the second that you get an idea, you get bought, they have infinite money, you get bought and acquired, and then they adopt your feature, they build you into your platform instantly. You can't take
it. Yeah, I guess, but they couldn't do that with TikTok.
No, but TikTok owned a different category. TikTok's a different to Instagram.
How's it different?
Well, so TikTok is like, they're really short videos. How long is a TikTok video? Like 20 seconds, 30 seconds? I'll go up to 60 seconds. But that's all it is. And it's different in terms of how the feed works. Like it's kind of like just the explore feed.
Yeah, exactly right. And Instagram brought in Reels, right? Which is kind of more like that.
Yeah, they copied TikTok.
Yeah, but what they couldn't do was copy it and then kill it.
Because it was too big at that point.
It was too popular.
Yeah, it's too big at that point.
Yeah, I know, but they obviously would have seen it when it was smaller and they couldn't stop it.
Yeah, I guess they tried to stop it.
They tried to stop it, they couldn't.
But it already had all of China. So it was already like as big as Instagram.
Yeah, in China. But I'm saying I guess it moved into the States. They couldn't stop it, which I thought was surprising.
Mm.
And they seem to have... Well, they might become more popular than Instagram.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But yeah, I still see them in a different category in many ways. Just because like Instagram is just used for a different purpose and TikTok is used for a different purpose. I just don't think... It's just like... I guess to make the comparison to gyms, it's like, fuck, we are never going to get to... There's going to be a long after show, guys. If you think about a gym, it's like, okay, say like a Fit Stop and an F45, basically indistinguishable, like, but they're kind of replacing each other. Whereas like, I think the difference between... I guess people would argue differently, but I see the difference between a TikTok and an Instagram is so different. Like TikTok doesn't even have photos. And like TikTok is like all exploring. So you're like always seeing new content. Yeah. Whereas Instagram is just seeing the people you follow, right? Unless you go into the explore page. But Instagram has like, I guess they're just like, you don't really do dance videos and shit on Instagram or anything like that. And there's like a whole different generation of users and stuff. So I just see them as completely separate categories. But I guess you could say they're quite similar in many ways.
I mean, I guess one of the things that, if you looked at it 10 years ago, you think they all look almost identical. You're like, oh, Facebook's where you share photos and videos. You're like, nah, dude, you're on Instagram now, you're crazy. You're like, nah, you funny videos. Nah, do funny videos, that's on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just, I guess new things will come about, but they are like, I guess they're niching more and more. Kind of like gyms.
Yeah.
Whereas before you said like one gym for everyone, now it's like, dude, just powerlifting gyms.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the niche then is like something that the big platforms don't really do that well.
Mm.
So I guess like Instagram did videos really well. They had IGTV or whatever. Well, I guess IGTV was to replace YouTube, right? They wanted to steal market share from YouTube. That was the idea. Mm. But it's like it was too hard.
They couldn't.
Yeah. So like Instagram just keeps doing what Instagram is good at. Yeah, they got Reels. And yeah, they got other stuff. But it's kind of just a way for creators to bring people into their content and do more of the same of what they're already doing, really. It's kind of found its own place. So yeah, I don't know.
It'd
be interesting. I could see some sort of cryptocurrency thing coming up. But anyway. All right, guys. Before we jump into the listener questions... As you know, we have a giveaway going on at the moment. So for the month of May, if you guys purchase any of our programs online, you can go to our website, themindmuscleproject.com/programs. You make any of those purchases and you use the code giveaway. What you will do is you will go into the draw for a chance to win a day with the MMP. So we will put you up and a partner if you want to bring them in a hotel room. You'll then spend half a day with us, which includes going to the studio, sitting in on the live after show and asking us a question, training at locker room. Obviously, our new exclusive gym, and then we're going to take you for our favorite lunch spot, and we'll treat you to lunch, and we'll do all that in half a day, and you'll get that chance to kind of be in a nice hotel, a little getaway, be in the city, and do whatever you please from then on. So make sure you do
that. When are we announcing the winner?
End of the month, I'd imagine. Yeah, cool. So,
couple weeks left.
Yeah, make sure you guys go into that draw if you want to check it out.
All right, first question is Fit Stop Charlie, potentially has a Fit Stop. He's getting patellar tendonitis pain under the bottom of his kneecap from increasing squat volume. Annoying because his squat was progressing nicely. Would you pull back from squatting completely just to focus on sissy squats, cyclist squats, tempo extensions, etc.? Or would you just bring this exercise in as additional and pull back on the squatting slightly?
I think I would lean more towards the latter. Yeah, I wouldn't completely stop your squat training because only heavy back squats or heavy front squats can give you what those exercises give you. And if you take them out, you will lose a lot of strength very quickly. Because I've walked this path, you know. Mm. I never had a strong squat. And trying to get a strong squat, the biggest thing between me and more weight on the bar was fucking knee pain. Every time I got stronger, every time the volume ramped up, my knees started aching. I started to get really sharp pain in my knees, especially around the patella area. So I can definitely relate to this. I guess my advice to your question would be, pull back some of the volume. I definitely pushed the volume up way too much. I'd stick to maybe some heavier sets low volume, depending on what your goal is, and incorporate, yeah, more of that knee strengthening exercises and rehab stuff.
Yeah, you definitely don't need to cut the squats additionally. Like, I've had this so many times in the past. You get like a bit of knee pain, and then you just like change your squat stance. Maybe you go a bit wider, or you change your feet up, and it's fine. It's pain-free.
And then
you can start doing all your rehab stuff outside of that. You still need to watch the volume of all this other stuff you're chucking in. If you start chucking in like sissy squats and extensions, bro, that is probably more likely to cause knees pain. You have to really watch the volume when you do that stuff as well. So really both, you probably need to pull back the volume on. But squats, you can try a different stance, try a different type of squat, and it might be pain-free.
Yeah.
Zach Bastian. Loving your podcast. I'm super new to CrossFit and learning a lot from you guys. As I said, I started CrossFit 2 to 3 months ago and quickly became obsessed, having more fun than ever before and training harder than ever before. Just graduated from university and finished his soccer career there, which was a pretty high level in Canada, and has been bodybuilding for the last 4 or 5 years alongside it. I'm pretty much asking this long-winded goal to ask, should I set the goal? Is it reasonable for me to set the goal of making regionals one day, like maybe 5 to 7 years down the line? My current PBs are squat, listen, kilos, 153 kilos, deadlift, 147 kilos, bench, 137 kilos, and he ran a 6 kilometer at 4:56 pace.
Fuck, he squats more than he deadlifts. That's a big issue. Man, such a hard question to answer. I do remember this question because I think he messaged me privately and I posted it up. He may have messaged you privately as well. He's a young kid. Man, like, look, anything's possible. If you train hard enough and you dedicate yourself to it, you know, you got to reach your potential. I think that's the only way to know, right? The only way is to put everything into it, follow the program, get a good coach, get good training partners, do your nutrition, do your diligence, and, you know, do your absolute best. Now, all you have to know is that there are going to be a lot of sacrifices along the way. And so you have to be okay with those sacrifices, which is like, you know, you will sacrifice some social events. Not everything. I think it's like stupid to think that you'll never see your friends again, but, you know, you'll have to kind of pull back on the endless amounts of partying that you do when you're in your early 20s. You know, there will be, you'll have to sacrifice on your work. You know, it's hard to work a full-time job and a career and put all your time, effort, and energy into that if you're also trying to be a full-time athlete. And we see it all the time. We see people come through our business and have come through our business multiple times. And if the priority is being an athlete, the work suffers because they don't want to get up early. They don't want to, they're more thinking about their training. They're looking at training videos all day at work. And, you know, they're just not giving their 100% to the company and the vision of the company. So whatever job you get needs to really support that training, I think. You know, it has to kind of fit around that lifestyle, which means you put any career progression on hold for a long time, which might not seem very important now in your early 20s. But I'll tell you right now, the people that start developing and cultivating, you know, good work habits and professional skills at an early age, you know, they skip the timeline that people that only really start to see the fruits of their labor in their 40s, they start seeing it in their 30s. So I guess it just depends what's important to you. And it's always hard to know what's important to you right now. All I will say as well is because you are so new in the sport, you have literally no idea of the amount of work you have to put in. Like you can't even see the tip of the iceberg. You haven't even licked the first molecule of H2O on the tip of the iceberg, right? It's just a fantasy for you right now. And the work that you have to put in to be good at this, and I don't tell this to turn you off. I tell this to set your expectations in the right place. And if me telling you this turns you off, you need to not fucking do it because you are going to train a lot. And CrossFit, training for CrossFit is fucking miserable. Like, there is literally very few things that compare to how unenjoyable training for CrossFit can be when you become a competitor. Doing it casually, like at a CrossFit gym with your mates and throwing down, is super fun. When you have to stay back for 3 hours and work on hollow holds and scap pull-ups and tempo ring rows and false grip muscle-up progressions, you know, and rip your hands up and then work through that and just, you know, do all this shit when it's cold and you'd rather be at home watching movies and Netflix, like, that is the work that you're going to have to go through for so, so many years. And you're going to have to show up to comps and get absolutely fucking flogged by people. And you're going to go up nowadays in a sport with people that are at your age, have already been doing the sport for 5 years, have 100 kilos and all the lifts that you just mentioned, 100 is probably exaggerating, probably 50 to 60 kilos, and they're probably 2 or 3 years younger than you. Those are the people you're competing against. So it's not to say you can't ever make regionals. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that this is what you are up against. You are up against thousands, tens of thousands of hours of miserable training. Because I make the closest comparison to the sport I did, which was swimming. You're by yourself all the time. You're constantly working on your weaknesses. There's very little social aspect to it. And it's just very, very monotonous work over and over and over again. And even the competing side of it is very few and far between. Whereas like a team sport, it's very fun to train for. You're training with your buddies. You're socializing all the time. You're playing a game every single weekend. With swimming, you only do a couple of meets a year. So you train all year. You're staring at the black line. You spend hours and hours doing the same shit over and over and over again. You have small breaks in between exercises where you can socialize for a very small period of time with the other people in the pool, and then it's head back down staring at the black line until you go to a meet, you jump in the pool, it's all over in fucking 2 minutes. So I'd make a close comparison to that. It could be different. You could have a really good training crew there and you got heaps of other people like that. I think that's, you know, more of the exception rather than the rule these days.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know. I think that, I mean, you definitely can. There's no reason why you can't. You have a really good background. You played really high level soccer. You obviously know how to work hard. You have good fitness. You've done bodybuilding for years. That's why your like lifts are pretty strong. So you have a pretty solid background going into this. So if you actually wanted to work for it, like you said, and the good thing is you have a pretty realistic time frame. 5-7 years is like really realistic.
That is a realistic time.
Yeah, you've probably got it spot on there. Could actually be faster than that. But I think it's a good timeline. If you feel like working day in, day out for that timeline, I think you can definitely achieve it. The only thing I don't know really from this is, if you have like some major shoulder issues, you're pretty much fucked. I don't know. You don't really list anything here to do with your shoulders. If you have like some really tight shoulders and major issues there, it's so rare I see someone overcome that and actually get to a really high level. So if you have none of those issues and it's a pretty blank slate, you can go for it. The one thing that I think is going to be quite different for you is that there's a big difference between, I think, succeeding in something like soccer when you're coming up and you're young and now you finish uni and you want to be really good at something like CrossFit, because they're just different stages in your life. One's in like your mid-20s and like one's when you're like mostly at high school, I guess, really. So they're just really different. You know, when you're in school, like everyone supports you. You got like no other responsibilities. You just do your work and you do your training. Whereas as you start to move in here, by the time you finish this, sounds like you're going to be probably nearly 30 years old, probably finishing uni here at like 22, 23,
yeah,
5 to 7 years. You could have a whole bunch of other responsibilities. And like, you might have a child, you might have an important job, and you're still going to have to train just as much as you were back then. Probably with less friends, probably with not as good of a coach, and not as good setup, because not much money is in CrossFit as there is soccer. So it's going to be a very different challenge.
Mm.
But man, if you love it, go for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let us know in 5-7 years.
Yeah, good luck.
I won't say the name of this person, but so she's got her hormone levels checked. She's female. She's 41 years old. She has no period. And she wants to like get her biomarkers better for training recovery. She just wants to know. She's like, went to a GP, got blood test results. Do you know anywhere that you can take results to get interpreted? Because she has no idea how to interpret the results.
Mm.
She just went and got them from a doctor.
Mm.
Which is a good question, because this is a really common issue.
Yeah.
Is you go to the doctor, I've done this before, they often won't even do the test you want. They ask all these questions, and you're just like, oh, I'm tired, I need the test, please. You're making up some bullshit. Because they're not really into like wellness, they're just into like disease. So it's a good question. Have you ever gone anywhere with blood test results?
Man, only that client at the gym, our locker room, who got his blood test from that company.
Yep.
I don't know if they focused on guys or do they?
Yeah, I don't know if they do women.
Okay.
But that was one where like, yeah, you do it specifically through them. Yeah, I think this one is tough. I think once you've got blood test results, like you haven't gone through a company, right? So then you've got this results and you want to take it to someone.
Yeah.
You're definitely going to take it to a really good naturopath.
Has our episode with Sarah King been released, Connor?
Next Monday.
So there's actually... Okay, yeah. So next Monday, there's going to be a... So by the time you're hearing this, it should be out. There's a girl that we worked with. Now, you mentioned, I don't know, my period. I assume that you've got... What did she call it? Hypothalamic amenorrhea or whatever?
Yeah.
HA?
Yeah. HA.
Like where you train too much, you're too lean or whatever, for whatever reason. You just train too much and you lose your period, which is a huge red flag. Potentially getting in contact with her after you listen to the episode.
What nationality was she again?
American.
Yeah.
Yeah, American. And yeah, getting in contact with her after you listen to that episode, and I think she could probably help you out with some of that stuff. At least she could point you in the right direction. But yeah, I'd say we're looking at some pretty big red flags already. And I would say that, yeah, you're going to interpret those results and you're going to see some issues.
Yeah, I think you just generally can't just go to your regular GP. That's the thing.
Yeah.
For this stuff, regular GP is not going to help you.
But you're on the right path. You obviously know there's some issues here and you're trying to get expert advice.
Okay, this question is from Adwin Asotasi. So he wants to get our thoughts on big brands' bargaining power in regards to equipment. He's an F45 franchise since 2014. Serious OG for F45. And he's watched the brand grow. And although one of the selling points has been the global network of studios, he's seen the cost of equipment blow out. The next release of equipment for F45 is the introduction of Concept 2 ski ergs and bike ergs, which from the price point for the package is nearly $2,000 to $3,000 more from F45 than if we were to go direct to Concept.
Oh, F45 is putting a margin on the...
They put a margin on all their equipment.
That's fucked.
And they force you to buy it. Let me know your thoughts with what are F45 as a global fitness brand. I know there's always been a discussion in our Facebook forums between franchisees.
Man. Yeah, I think from what I've heard and my experiences, and I could be wrong, and maybe there's like franchise owners out there who can, you know, tell me it's the difference, but they have not supported their franchise owners how they should have. Like, there's just not been the support that's needed. Maybe it's gotten better over time, but from the franchise owners that we know and that we've spoke to, they don't have your best interests at heart, really.
Yeah, I think there's particular frustration because from the one I spoke to, they would like release the new equipment you need to get. It's very expensive, and then they take the money out of your account.
Fuck.
Like, you're getting this. And it might not arrive for quite a long time.
This is the thing about franchises, right? It's like, who works for who? Do you actually own a business, or is it just a label that you get, and then you're at the mercy of what they're doing? Because in some instances like this, yeah, it's like, I don't know, it just doesn't say, you just work for someone. They give you the label like, oh, you own this franchise, but really we own you, and we do whatever we want. And so it can be tough. It can be really tough. But if there's, look, as a business owner, at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you and your profit margins and your bottom line. So if that means, you know, finding out a way to get equipment that's a little bit cheaper and still somehow following the rules, even though it's a bit of a gray area, like, I think that's your responsibility to do that. But, you know, you put yourself in this situation, so you need to get crafty with how to get yourself out of it.
Yeah, it does seem like it sucks though, because it's Concept 2 equipment. You know what it is.
Yeah.
It's not like it's their own rowers. So I'm not sure there's much you can do about it.
There's a long fucking waiting list right now to get Concept 2 equipment in Australia. I don't know where this franchise owner is, but yeah, we've waited.
Probably in Australia.
We waited like 12 weeks.
He has to be in Australia because it's 2014.
Oh, okay.
He opened in 2014. He has to be in Australia.
Yeah.
Okay. Corey Philpott. Oh, previous guest of the show.
Yeah. Strongest marathon.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on building two disciplines simultaneously?
We've talked about this a lot, Corey. And I know you listen, so I'm sure that you probably heard a similar thing. But for those of you who haven't heard us answer this question before, it's always going to be the complete different ends of the spectrum with the further away that they kind of are from each other. In some ways, the easier it is to kind of build them separately. So if you do like powerlifting, but then you also want to run a marathon, because the systems have nothing to do with each other in theory, they can be better to kind of build up. So it's like kind of supportive in one way to build up your low level aerobic system and do heavy strength training. It's when you get heaps of crossover in the middle that it can be hard to kind of build those things. And that actually really good example sticking on the CrossFit theme was Noah Olsen. So if you know CrossFit, Noah Olsen is like one of the best. Has he won the games yet? No.
No, he came second.
Oh, he came second. Yeah. Good on him. He used to be like one of the best middle ground athletes. So he had like no top end speed or strength, and he had like no long strength, but he was like really good in the middle. And to actually get his middle better and to get him as a better athlete, I remember way back when we used to interview the Training Think Tank guys, they said the first protocol they did was they trained really explosive work, really heavy strength work, cut everything out in the middle, and did just long aerobic work. So that's all his training looked like, to build up himself as a better athlete. So if you are doing really long endurance stuff and then you're doing like strength work, then I think you can build them quite well. I think it's when you do like interval aerobic stuff, you know, for like getting a really fast 5K and then you go and do high volume bodybuilding, you're getting a lot of crossover there. And then as a result, they kind of diminish the systems and you're kind of pulling from the same system over and over again. And it's like hard for your body to recover. But I think the further away they are from each other, the kind of easier it is to see progress in both. But that being said also, the best powerlifter in the world is also not trying to be like a really good runner as well. So you're limited in how much you can build here, but using that theory and that strategy, you will see a bit more progress.
Yeah. And I think even, I would assume it kind of matters like, honestly, just what the body parts are as well.
Yeah.
You know, as well, like if you're trying to get really good at swimming and you also want to stay really strong in your squat, you probably can pull that off, right?
Yeah.
Long distance swimming and Yeah, one's really aerobic, one's like really powerful, and using opposite ends of the body.
Yeah.
That can mix
well. Well, I know you don't kick, but yeah.
Who kicks? But yeah, when you find it the hardest is like when they're just pretty similar.
Yeah.
That's when you're really screwed. A good example would be like trying to like, I think like even bodybuilding style training with that sort of like interval training, it's like such a similar feel.
Yeah.
Both doing burn and like, yeah, yeah. You just drain when you go from one to the next.
Yeah. Yeah. If the training styles feel really different, I think it's easier to build them up separately.
That's it.
That's it. Oh, that's all listener questions.
Done.
Oh, we smashed them. All right. We're going to bring this home. So before I jump into, actually, we're going to do a book review this week. So we decided it's getting too hard to do Netflix reviews because you and I don't watch the same stuff all the time.
If there's something good on Netflix, though, we're obviously going to review it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like the Seaspiracy. But
that wasn't really good, but it had to be reviewed.
It had to, yeah. It's related to what you guys want to hear us talk about. But we just wanted to do a book because now on 75 Hard, which are almost finished, day 67 today. What are you, day 60 or something?
62.
Okay.
Yeah. Nearly done. I think it's nearly 2 weeks was what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, it's like...
Yeah, I think it's 2 weeks today, maybe.
Anyway, but the point is, I've been reading a lot of books. I haven't like turned the TV on. I don't really... Monday to Friday, I actually don't think the TV comes on. I don't even know if it works anymore. But I'll watch it a little bit on the weekend. That's mainly because I'm watching like fighting or something on Sunday. But... So that's why we decided to do books because we're reading lots of books at the moment. But before we dive into the book review, you guys know we have a new sponsor, which we're very excited about. And we actually did a full episode on why you should and shouldn't foam roll and how to use foam rolling. Now, our new sponsor is Black Roll. So they're a German-based company that basically have engineered, like most Germans do, the best of the best in the world. And these are the best foam rollers you can get in the world. Super premium brand, premium look, fully recyclable, super lightweight, great to travel with, super compact, feel really good. My brother's a huge fan of foam rollers. He uses them all the time in his training. And I gave one of them to him. And he was like, fuck, just one of this, the best foam roller I've probably ever used. I was like, yep, that's the Germans for you. So great tool to keep around in your gym. Even better at recycle, so if you ever get rid of it, you won't need to, but you know it won't go completely to waste. But you can check them out, themindmuscleproject.com/blackroll. And I would recommend, if you're on the fence about foam rolling in general and the science behind it, go check out the episode we did last week called Does Foam Rolling Really Work? Please check that out. Got a lot of really good feedback on that episode. Cool.
They have so many types of foam rolls as well. That's, you go on, they have... everything.
They got, the ball looks like an avocado. Did you see that? Did you see my post?
Yeah, they got some funny stuff. Exactly. And like is it actually foam? It's not made out of foam, right? Is that foam?
It's
foam. It doesn't feel like anything like a regular foam, though. Like, it's not that soft. It's like so hard, totally different.
It's hard to describe. It's when you get it, you go,
it's not like a blue foam roll, like the classic.
No.
Different material. Different.
It's so light.
Yeah.
So light. But it's also so dense. It doesn't make sense. Okay, so... the book that we are reviewing this week is The Magic of Thinking Big by David J. Schwartz. Now, very old book.
1959.
Wow. So, I believe David J. Schwartz is a professor and has his like research or PhD in like human psychology or something. Or like he's like a professor of positive psychology at Yale or something like that. At the time, he was like one of the world's leading experts on like motivational psychology. Now... I think it's probably one of the original manuscripts for like self-development and positive thinking. That's probably what I would put it down to. Would you put it?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah. It's like,
well, even this book I've given you here is like builds on some of his ideas as well. Now, I think that for a lot of people that read this book, intuitively the ideas make sense, but there's never concrete or good examples or stories that they have in their own life where they take broad level idea example and distill it down into everyday action. And that's what I think this book does really well. It tells you how, okay, if I think very positively about, you know, if I don't talk negatively about people or whatever, or I do the right thing, people are like, yeah, I know I want to do the right thing. But it gives you an example. Okay, if you do the right thing, then what it actually means is it doesn't mess with your self-integrity. And if you ever kind of, you know, play around with your self-integrity a little bit, you know, the old saying, do as I say, not as I do, then what it does, it takes away your confidence, right? Because you know, oh, well, I'm saying this, but I don't really do it all the time. So then you lack a little bit of confidence. And then obviously people know how confidence affects them in their day-to-day. Confidence might be then...
back to the lobsters.
Exactly. Then you're not standing up as tall. So it all kind of ties together. But I think, yeah, just what this book does, it ties a lot of just really good ways to think, good thinking, positive strategies, and then it distills them down into how this affects you every day, which I think is so important, right? Which is why the ideas stick around in your head, because you're like, oh, wow, he makes a really good point here. Maybe I should start doing X, Y, Z. Well, yeah, that's that.
No, I was just thinking, I thought you were going to keep going.
No, no.
My experience with it is that I read the book, I want to say like over a decade ago, and looking at this now, it seems like that was not the original version, but like the 1987 version. And then
is the one you read?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, wow, fuck.
Oh, I don't know, actually. Well, they said that it was redone in 1987 from the 1959 one. And it seemed really old.
The one I read. Parts of it seem really old.
It was really old. I really liked it at the time. And then it had been ages, so I re-listened to it again on audiobook. I think I first listened to it because it was like the number one book recommendation from Tim Ferriss.
Oh, okay.
Like, I think I heard the 4-Hour Work Week, and he's like, in the book, he was like, don't read any more books. He's like, here's like two exceptions. And like, this was like one of the exceptions. I was like, oh, perfect next book for me. And yeah, it's cool. I mean, I think the idea of it almost is actually like pretty original as well. Like, I haven't really heard it from anywhere else going into it. I guess most times you probably hear it, it's probably from this book. And it's one of those things that, yeah, I think anytime you're a bit down on something or anything is a bit negative, often you'll catch yourself, you're thinking pretty small. As soon as you start thinking bigger about something, it generally lifts up your mood. You know, and it's a more positive way to go about it. It's almost hard to think negatively when you're thinking really big. So the foundation of it is really good. It has insanely high ratings across every single category you can imagine on the internet. I, having done the paper version and the audiobook version, I actually think the paper version is better for you because how it tends to go down is, I think it's a really good book to read a little bit of every single day, rather than a book maybe that you want to consume like crazy in one go. But yeah, I'd say it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, cool. Just a quick update before we wrap up the show, guys. We've just been handed an email from the inside of True Protein, because that's how connected we are. The True didn't know about this article that came out, and it's not exactly accurate. So it's factually incorrect. Those are the words of True Protein. So please ignore the facts within that article, but they do have a good long-standing relationship with F45, and they're obviously looking at exploring partnership opportunities and everything, but there's actually nothing set in stone here. So no changes on their end to their like athlete sponsorships or partnerships or anything like that. So just wanted to kind of flag that for everyone.
Emergency email.
See, this F45, released, bro, putting out bullshit again. So I'll give you some quotes from The Magic of Thinking Big to wrap up. If you want to find these, they're in my story highlights. And, you know, there are some books that I take photos of and I highlight and I put on my story. No one says anything. And then there are some books I do that and I get a fuckload of people that DM me and go, what is that book? Where can I get it? Firstly, if you want to know what book it is, it's always the top of every page. So you can just find it at the top there.
If you don't know that, you've got a problem.
But there's some really good ideas in there. And, man, heaps that I didn't post photos of. I wish I posted a few more. But a couple of the highlights I put in there... Cool. So first quote I highlighted is, others see in us what we see in ourselves. He grows smaller in the estimation of the people around him. So I'll say it again. Others see in us what we see in ourselves. He grows smaller in the estimation of the people around him. It's really good. Next one. Thinking success conditions your mind to create plans that produce success. Sorry, again. Thinking success conditions your mind to create plans that produce success. Next one. We need every man who aspires to leadership for himself and his company a determination to undertake a personal program of self-development. We need from every man who aspires to leadership for himself and his company a determination to undertake a personal program of self-development. That one could not be more true.
I think if you read any more, we're going to get a copyright infringement.
Last one.
This is the last one.
Once the victim of this failure disease has selected a good excuse, he sticks with it. Then he relies on the excuse to explain himself and to others why he's not going forward. Yeah, so there's tons of good stuff in there like that. I reckon a lot of people have copied that in the past. But anyway, out of five.
Man, it's a good book. Probably a 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go with a 4 out of 5. I think it's really good. I'll probably read it again.
A little bit every day, I think, is a cool way for it.
Yeah. All right, guys, there it is. As we mentioned, Black Roll, check them out, and then the giveaway as well for our programs. Make sure you don't miss it. And guys, as always, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.